To set the scene for the particular passage we're going to hear and a discussion that we'd like to have with you this morning by way of sharing today's message. I'd just like to start off by saying, what does trust mean? I spoke earlier to the children about a promise and making promises and how important that was. But I just want to highlight this question to begin with. What does trust mean? I think when we get in a bus, for example, we trust that the driver has a license. We trust that the driver knows where to go. We trust that the driver will get us to where we go safely. And if we aren't sure exactly which stop to get out at, we trust that the driver will signal to us, this is where you can get off the bus. So in everyday life, we encounter lots of circumstances where we trust. Now, trust can be defined as reliability. We trust the driver's reliability. We trust that the driver of the bus is reliable enough to get us where we want to go. We trust in the reliability of all of the other aspects of the journey. So that it implies also an element of truth, that the driver knows where to go, that the driver will be honest and fair and take us to the right place. Now, tied up with the word trust is indeed the word promise. And so what does promise mean? When I was chatting with the younger members of the congregation, I used some fairly broad terminology. But let me be now a little more specific. Because you see, a promise, if anything, takes trust up an extra notch. When we make a promise, as the children said, we should keep it. Because a promise is an assurance. It's more than even an assurance, it's a declaration that you are committed to something. Now, in everyday life, we have lots of circumstances where promises are shared. Other words that we could use for a promise would be included in that first example that we had about covenant. In that prayer that we shared that mentioned the word covenant. And we tend to use that word covenant when we're talking about God making a covenant with people. But covenants fit in a whole range of different circumstances. Another word we could use is vow. As a very starry-eyed 21-year-old, I knelt in front of the altar beside Christine and we made certain vows. And I said at the early services, I knew what those vows almost 50 years ago were going to result in. I had no idea the importance of those vows and the value of having made those promises so long ago. So when you make a promise, you have a high degree of expectation that what has been said will be carried out. Now, everyday life tends to suggest that that may not be what society expects nowadays. But I want to be able to share with you the concept of a promise. And the next question is, Where do we see examples of struggle and promise today? There is a need for a promise to be a struggle. If it is easy, if it is hard, a promise can be a struggle. In the community, for example, let's think about election time. Let's think about the promises that we hear and how, in many cases, after the election, the political leaders come out and they say, well, we weren't quite aware of all of the circumstances, and you get a degree of backing away from some of those promises that are made. But there's also, in everyday life, changing circumstances. People, as they develop a relationship, sometimes they like what they see, sometimes they don't like what they see. And the promises become a real struggle to keep. But there's also the risk, I believe, in today's society that sometimes the promise gets broken because something better comes up or someone better comes along. And that leads me on to my next introductory question, and that is, in what ways do we see trust and relationship shown in our faith community? Is our community of faith here at HTK supposed to be different than the rest of society? Well, of course it is. This is a community of faith. One would hope that within this community of faith, we would find words such as dependability. That we can depend on the other members of this community when we are in need. We can depend on them. We should also hear a word like confidentiality. That if we share something in confidence, it stays in confidence. It's long been said in this community that there is no place in this community for gossip. Gossip is such a negative thing and such a destructive force. So one would hope that within our community, within this faith community, we would find confidentiality and we'd also find respect. Respect for one another. I would trust that we also have a shared vision and a shared purpose for HTK being what HTK actually is and what HTK represents, and that we would have caring as one of our prime objectives, caring for one another in the way that Jesus cares for us. And that would also mean that we share that caring for the disadvantaged, for the silenced, for the overlooked within our community. Here at HTK, we do care for the community. The fact that during the offertory, we have food, we have clothing brought forward as part of our offering for the broader community. The fact that we have so many involved in pastoral care. But today, we want to be able to focus upon some biblical examples of promises, hard promises, promises that get broken, and promises that get kept.
As I'm reading through this reading, I'd like you to be thinking about where you see injustice, where you see promises, where you see fulfillment over the generations, and where you see, or don't see, the missing voices. So our reading is from Genesis 29, verses 15 to 28. If you'd like to follow, it's page 28. After Jacob had stayed with him a whole month, Laban said to him, "Just because you are a relative of Should you work for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be. Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel was lovely in form and beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel. Laban said, it's better that I give you to her than to some other man. Stay here with me. So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife. My time is complete and I want to lie with her. So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob, and Jacob lay with her. And Laban gave his servant girl Zilpah to his daughter as her maidservant. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, what is this you've done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me? Laban replied, it is not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish this daughter's bridal week, and then we will give you the younger one also, in return for another 7 years of work. And Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his servant Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maidservant. Jacob lay with Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he worked for Laban another 7 years. Hear the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Okay. Did you find any injustice? Where did you find injustice? A broken promise? Okay, so the person that was had the injustice against them was Jacob. Did you see anybody else with injustice?
Rachel and Leah for treated as possessions, property.
Not only property, I think for Rachel too. She must have known of the promise and expected to be married, and suddenly somebody else is there. All right, let's think about Abraham now. Take the story back a few generations, a generation or two. What about the injustice that happened then? It's something that's continued over the generations. It didn't just start here with Laban. What about Abraham? Do you know of any injustice in that story? Anything about Sarah and Hagar? Remember, God promised Abraham that he would have as many descendants as stars in the sky, the sand on the beach, the dust. But what happens when the promise doesn't come about?
He got impatient.
He couldn't wait for God. So along comes Ishmael, son of the servant. Bit of a problem, isn't there? God promised him many, many offspring. So then he's got one. A little bit illegitimate, don't worry about that. Then Sarah has a baby. How does that work with the promise? It's going very slowly, the promise. He's going to have millions of descendants. And by that far in the story, he's got two. What about the injustice between Sarah and Hagar? Do you know what happened between Sarah and Hagar? Who's going to fill us in on that bit of the story? Abraham sends Hagar out, but why? Because Sarah didn't want her son playing with the other son, the illegitimate son, so to speak. Is there any injustice there for the two boys then? There is, isn't there, when you think about it? One boy's got the birthright, not the right boy. Bit of a problem. A bit like Jacob and Esau, as we go down to that part. Same thing. Jacob and Esau was the same story repeated. Do you follow that? One injustice leads on to the next one. Okay, just think about the world today. Forget Abraham, think about his descendants, 7 billion of us or whatever there are on the planet, 7 billion, sorry. Where is there injustice today? I know where everything's fine, everything's rosy. Where is there injustice today? Where's Joanne Blake? She was going to stand up and answer some questions, she told me. Beforehand, she would be full of answers. Joan, do you see any injustice anywhere? Come on, where do you see injustice in the world? It's everywhere.
People on the street,
homeless people.
People trafficking,
slavery. More slaves in the world at the moment than there's ever been. At all? Beg your pardon? Maybe what they do with it. Yes. Where do we go helping people? Where does our money go? Think about our mission agencies. Why do we send money to mission agencies? To help people, usually, who are suffering injustice of some sort. I'm sorry, Greg, you said something and I didn't hear.
Inequality. Poverty,
okay.
No education, lack of education.
Okay, where do we find places like that? No education, usually in schools.
In schools, usually in non-Christian areas.
Non-Christian areas.
Cambodia
particularly. In the Aboriginal arena. We were fortunate to have Ian at the early service and he was telling us about some of that disadvantage there. What about Sylvia James? What does she do? We sent her a lot of money. What does she do with that money? Helps disadvantaged people. Exactly. I thought you'd be full of things. What about looking in the politically across the world? Are there any countries where we, as Australians, as outsiders, can look and see where there's any injustice going on? We won't worry about injustice that goes on here. Just look at other countries.
Korea?
North Korea? United States? Syria? Egypt? Russia? Lots and lots and lots of places, usually not Christian, I will say that. But what about another group of people for whom there's injustice? What about persecuted Christians? Which country in the world do you think has the most persecuted Christians? China? What about India? Oh, we don't think about India. Northern part of India, Christians are badly persecuted. We can go on and on. So there's lots of injustice out in the world. Africa, lots of places, lots and lots of places. But what about fulfilling the promises?
When we're talking about caring and we are talking about injustice, there are many examples in the Bible where God addresses those injustices. God suggested to Abram that he would become the head of a mighty nation. And they became the Israelites. Not in his time, as try as he may, he didn't ever succeed in getting as many descendants as stars in the sky in his lifetime. But over a period of time, God's promise became fulfilled. God also made a promise to Hagar, the mother of Ishmael, that he would become the father of a nation. And the Ishmaelites, we've mentioned them in the last couple of weeks in our Bible story, the Ishmaelites, but in today's society, the basic Ishmaelites are the broad spread of Middle Eastern nations, particularly the Islamic nations, are the Ishmaelites coming to their nationhood. We also had in the time of Esau the Edomites and the Canaanites. In many ways, the Canaanites became the example as to what was going to happen to the Israelites if they were not true to their side of the covenant that God had made with them of giving them the promised land. You may remember that when they were given the promised land, they were told to clear the land. And that meant to remove from the land the cultic activities of the Canaanites. However, the Israelites had been wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. They weren't settled. They weren't farmers. And so they decided that rather than clearing all of the people out, they would keep the people there and learn how to look after the land. High objective, good reason, but the result was that the promise became polluted. The promise of God was polluted because the Israelites didn't keep their side, and as a result, the cultic practices of the Canaanites infiltrated their faith system, and as a result, you have longer term the exile. So these are examples of the way in which God's promise was lived out or not lived out, how the promise was hard because it was going to take longer than a generation to be fulfilled, and in many ways it's an example of people having a short-term versus a long-term perspective, or what we could also say, looking at the small picture compared to God's larger picture. But if we take a look at the Bible, we will see that God's transforming power can have an impact upon a circumstance, sometimes immediately, sometimes it will take generations for it to come to be. We now want to be able to share a little bit of time about the missing voices. Those voices in the story that were overlooked.
Just thinking back to the story a little bit, we didn't hear what Leah felt about being involved in all this deceit. We didn't hear what Rachel felt. We didn't hear any of the women's voices. Now, part of that was because of the culture of the time. They were just regarded as not important. Imagine if you were the mother of those girls. Would you like to see that happen to your children? If you were those girls, would you like to see it happen? Definitely not, but there's not one word about it. As we say, it was the culture of the time, but we need to listen to that and look at it in the light of today. Whose voices are missing today from our church? Think of our service here. You might think of the earlier service at 8 o'clock. Think also of the Wednesday service. We'll include all of those three services as our church. Whose voice aren't we hearing in our church?
Children.
No, you're right.
Indigenous people,
thank you. Any other group that we're not hearing from?
People who don't come.
Yeah. Who?
Non-churchers.
Well, yes, we don't ever hear. hear from the non-church goers. I suppose we do by their comments in the paper about how weird we are, but other than that, we don't know why they don't come.
People under 20,
yes, not only the children, but the young people and the young families. But look around. Don't we all look like white Anglo-Saxon people? What's wrong with it? We're missing a lot of God's people. We're missing the Indigenous people. We're missing people from minority groups around.
It's what they can tell us, what they can share with us, the impact that they can have on our lives. That's what's missing, and that's why it's important.
Look at our church in the broader sense, the whole diocese. Who's missing in the whole diocese? Plenty of people like us when it comes to synod. Yes, we all look the same, almost swap one for another.
What about the people out west?
I think they're missing. Why are they missing? What happened to those people that are out west? Why do you think they might be missing? Because they're out west, so they're not close to the city. They miss out on so much that goes on in the city. Not many clergy out there. You know that old poem about the parish of Baku that we talked about the other day?
Where the preachers are
scanty. Some men of religion are scanty. That's what's happening out there. So what has that got to do with us? Do we just meet and forget about those people out there that don't have anywhere to meet or don't have a pastor to care for them?
We should pray for them.
We could indeed pray for them. Any other people missing as a whole group in our church?
The young people.
No, there aren't many young people, and they are missing. They all went with Stuart, but never mind. Only some of them did, of course. Homeless people?
It's not for the schools, is it?
No.
Two generations, not for the schools.
So what's the result of that?
We should take care of
it. Was interesting, I saw an article in the paper recently that was saying because religion is not taught in the schools now, look at the void we've got in morals and ethics. Oh yes. Did they think about that at the time?
Well,
no, just acts it out. Okay. Whose voices have been silenced? Who's wanted to say something and not been able to say something in the world?
The disadvantaged people, the people that aren't vulnerable, the people that aren't poor, the people that we ignore.
That's right. Not only we ignore them. Lots of people ignore them, the politicians ignore them, particularly when they have a pay rise and other people don't. Anyway, let's have a quick look at this, connecting with life, our life. Girls in the poorest regions of the world are among the most disadvantaged people on the planet. They're more likely to live in poverty, more likely to be denied access to education, more likely to be denied medical care, and more likely to be malnourished simply because they're girls. And yet, studies show that if you give a girl enough to eat, an education, and a safe environment, she'll work to raise the standard of living for herself, her family, and her community. Certainly something to think about, isn't it? Here's somebody who does something about helping girls, Sylvia James. This is our last day of our collection for Sylvia. So something to think about it. Yes, that's been a whole month we've been collecting money for Sylvia. Yes, you better get some money out of it. But it's something to think about. Besides Sylvia, what other groups help girls who eventually help their communities?
She Rescue,
an excellent one. Destiny Rescue is a similar one. ABN?
Abortion Rescue.
VCA helping out west where there's very few people. Okay, I'll leave any other comments about Sylvia Jean's until later.